This is the Lombardi Line with Story Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, coming at you on VSiN and DraftKings Network. We're live in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into some college football with the professor, Aaron Moore, who's going to stop by. I know you have a lot of burning questions for him. Also, plenty of NFL to get to, including in just a moment, our top five NFL quarterbacks in the National Football League. But I wanted to start off asking you a Vegas-specific question here. Because the Mirage here in Vegas is set to close next Wednesday on July 17th. And with that, they have been tasked with paying out $1.6 million in progressive jackpots leading up to that date. Another $1.2 in cash prize. It's like $200,000 that's given out a day. That place is a madhouse right now from what I have seen in pictures and videos.
I mean, they're doing these hot seat drawings. So people are just trying to occupy machines and win drawings. And it's a cluster, let's put it that way. And I know there's a lot of videos there, and you see these people sitting there, they're not playing, they're just on the machine. And however often you have to hit it to say you're active, right? And
bam. There's security guards guarding some machines for players too.
That's the thing about it. It's tough, those hot seat drawings. What you do when you're closing down, let's say you're ending your bad beat jackpot, you're closing a poker room, stuff like that. You have to put a plan in place and submit it to gaming, and then they approve. That's how you're going to distribute the funds, because the funds came from players to create these jackpots. There's different ways to do it. I always thought of tournaments like a clean way to do it. We do a lot of tournaments here. We have fun with it. But like, you could have people qualify for a tournament, say the people that log the most hours of play over a certain time. I know in theory, the hot seat drawings get people playing table games. It gets people buying in and gambling to do it, but we always prefer to come up with some sort of a tournament format where like everybody that qualified gets a minimum of something, and then the prizes tier up as you advance.
Well, Bill Krakenberger, who is a staple of a numbers game with Gil Alexander, he tweeted about everything, and he said that he went to go check it out, said it was basically New Year's Eve times five with the foot traffic, no seats available anywhere. Quote, I know so many high-level players that were called by their hosts and given a BS story about this, telling them to come in, and not one of them could even get a seat. So, very chaotic, it sounds like.
I saw Bill's posted several videos about the chaos and how hard it is for legitimate people to get a machine to play. He said every machine, there's not one empty machine in the entire casino. I know.
Was this a real sign, by the way?
That cannot.
Well, yeah, I saw Vital Vegas tweeted this.
I know.
But I didn't. My husband showed it to me last night, and I was like, that can't be real.
The fourth word of the second paragraph is it reads Vital Vegas all over, right? I mean, that's a Scott.
You're not wrong. No shade, Vital Vegas. Don't come for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, just I figured as somebody who's been in this industry as long as you have, that you'd have an opinion on what's going on there. And with the building closing, too, what do you think about no more Mirage in Las Vegas?
It'll be Hard Rock. Yeah. And I know Jim Allen well. We serve on the American Gaming Association Board of Directors. He's the former chairman, just ended his term. Very, very sharp man. Started as a dishwasher in the industry and worked his way up. Of course, Seminole's tremendously successful in Florida and other places. And what's interesting, what's going on with sports betting in the Supreme Court there. As well. So, I mean, you have to make the decision when you do these remodels, you take over a place, are you going to shut it cold, or are you going to try to do it and it takes a lot longer while you're operating and there's so much disruption? And believe me, we've had that happen at the D for many years, right? As we've overhauled that casino, and it's going to be time for the room renovation again soon. But, they're shutting it down a year and a half, and hopefully all the employees were able to find spots. I know they're going to come back and have a lot of table games. Going to be table games heavy. We'll see how that plays in the market. I think the employee market here is much different than in Florida, where people wait years to get a full-time job dealing at those casinos. It's much harder to maintain where there's so many casinos, your employment levels. But good luck to Jim, and I'm sure it'll be an exciting property. The Mirage was actually my favorite property.
Oh, really?
When I did not live here, to come and stay. And I remember when Bellagio opened. Our first trip, I used to take a trip once a year in the summer, come out, and usually during the World Series of Poker, but sometimes not. But so when the Bellagio opened the next trip, we booked at the Bellagio, and nothing against the Bellagio, but after the trip, I said to my girlfriend, I mean, let's go back to the Mirage. I just felt more comfortable at the Mirage. Right? I loved their pool. I thought they had the best logo, those palm trees, the coolest logo. I love their dice games where they have like a little awning over. It's very dark. So end of an era here with the Mirage. It certainly, though, had degraded into a mid, if not lower tier MGM property. Nothing like it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, and we're seeing that with a number of hotels in Vegas, mm-hmm. right? Like, over time, it just becomes aging.
As you open newer properties, exactly. they're up the pecking order of
turnover in casinos, just like in every other walk of life. But you mentioned palm trees. You mentioned Florida. Tyreek Hill, wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins. He had an interesting take on his top five quarterbacks in the NFL. He was asked on a live stream yesterday, and his answer is very interesting. Let's hear it.
Top five quarterbacks in the league. Patrick, Tua, Lamar. Dak. Baker Mayfield.
So it seemed
well
like
thought out. Well
the,
thought
the
out.
The first three he got out like nothing. Okay, one more reasonable one. Baker Mayfield. What'd you think?
a little biased.
And, I imagine.
And the Baker's a stretch.
He said a number of times about Tua, though, that he thinks that he's like God's gift to this earth. That he's
well,
the best.
He's had some success, sure. You would say, right? And he's gotten to play with two dynamic quarterbacks, at least putting it that way.
I don't think anybody's arguing with him Mahomes, but
I'm not.
That's second one on the list.
I'm not arguing Mahomes. The arguments for Mahomes would be all time, right, at this point. Where does he rank? Where does
Absolutely.
He rank all time?
But the Baker Mayfield to close it out was also something special. So in your top five, I wanted to go
yours first.
Mine first. Yeah, okay. I wanted to go through this exercise together when we heard Tyreek's list to have ideally a couple more reasonable lists, I would say, because neither one of us, I can confirm, even not having seen yours, has Baker Mayfield on it.
It's not.
So I'm going to throw out my top five. I had Patrick Mahomes as number one, as I imagine you do as well. I put Joe Burrow two. Two-time MVP Lamar Jackson, three. Josh Allen, four. And Aaron Rodgers, five. And I know when we were discussing the Jets earlier, you said as you were going through this exercise, you eliminated Rodgers just because of all of the what-ifs, which I think is completely fair. And I have been a known anti-Jets person throughout the course of this offseason. But I put Rodgers on here strictly just like, as an active quarterback and what he has done, four-time MVP, the numbers that this guy puts up, consistent 4,000-plus yard seasons year after year after year, I felt like just in terms of the passer that he is, he deserved to be on this list.
Okay, I'll buy the argument. So the other four I have on my list as well. Before we get to my list, though, you said you had, what, three honorable mentions?
I had a handful of others, yes, that could have worked
their
way in.
I have two to my list, but who were your... Who were the others in the running for the fifth spot on your list?
You might not like this one, and I don't think a lot of people will. But
I don't like the person, or I don't like them?
I don't think that you'd like the decision, because people don't talk about him as a top five quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But Matthew Stafford, I would have given some honorable mention to. Oh, really?
Yes.
He's your five. Okay. That's amazing.
He's my four. I have him ahead of Lamar.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't see that coming. Okay.
He's my four.
Matthew Stafford. Dak probably would have been in my honorable mention
Dak's
as well.
Not on my honorable mention.
Because he can't win the big game?
What have they done with him? He's been horrific in the playoffs. He's a great front runner. Give me a 10-point lead heading to the second quarter and give me Dak with no adversity. I think he plays very well with no adversity. I think when they get down in games, he doesn't lead them back. I mean, I guess I should pull stats, but like they get down 10 points to the Cardinals in week three. They're like a 12-point favorite. They could never get back in that game. He couldn't get him into the end zone, right? I look at those spots, and in the playoffs, I mean, it's been awful. Yeah. It's been awful. Look at the game when they went to San Francisco last year, week four or whatever? They were never in the game. They got destroyed, and it's not just the defense. They weren't scoring at all in the first half.
Sure. No, I agree with you, and I actually just relived that game the other day because I've been watching wide receiver. And George Kittle and Debo Samuel are two of the wide receivers. I mean, well, obviously Kittle's a tight end, but two players that are followed in that series. And that game, Kittle had three touchdowns and it was his birthday and he went off and it was fun to relive that game specifically. But you're dead on about that. I did think it was interesting that you put Josh Allen ahead of Lamar Jackson, considering Jackson does have the multi MVPs and versus at least what Allen has accomplished to this point.
Well, I think that he's had more talent around him and they've designed a system for him. But in the playoffs, and you could say this about Josh Allen, but in the playoffs, Josh Allen has had Kansas City beat, right? And they had the 12 sack, and he's performed well. I think the versatility he gives you as a runner and how tough he is, that's why I rank him above Lamar. Lamar was the wild card on my list. I almost didn't have him in here.
That's funny.
I thought about Jordan Love at five, but maybe it's too premature.
I think so.
Right?
I think so, just because he was such a different player from the first half of the season to the back half of the season. And then again, what we saw in that final game of the year against the 49ers for him in the playoffs, like something Michael and I have talked about a lot on the show is like which version, and maybe it's somewhere in between, is Jordan Love truly, and we'll have a better sample size of that this season.
And then the other one on my list was Purdy.
I love it.
Those were my two honorable mentions for my top five.
There was, I don't know if we'll get to play at this hour or not, but George Kittle was on the Rich Eisen show and he was talking about the 18-game potential for it and all of that. But he also said about Brock Purdy, the media tells you he's a little kid wearing some JCPenney backpack, but he's a monster. Like, and Rich Eisen said he's an assassin certain moments, right? Which he has the ability, the completion percentage there. He gets the ball to the playmakers. And you can criticize that all you want. You can call him a game manager all you want. That's a great quality to have at a quarterback.
But they set him up in where he has to make throws where he just got to get it in an area, but he gets it there, right? He gets the throw off and he gets it into where they can.
People act like he doesn't throw tight window throws to success. And he led the league in air yards per attempt last year. Like, what are we talking about that he. Anyways, I wouldn't say top five right now just because still some room to grow and see what he is without some of those weapons, but huge Brock Purdy fan to the surprise of no one. We're turning gears to a little college football action. Aaron Moore is joining us next.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, we've talked a lot this offseason about the turnover in college football, and that's true in a lot of different ways, whether it be new teams and new conferences this year, the transfer portal going crazy, all of the head coaching turnover and the ripple effects that have come from Nick Saban ultimately deciding to retire, Jim Harbaugh moving on. There's a lot of layers to this, but for we as bettors, in addition to turnover and making sure you know everybody that's on these roster schedules, all those things, there's a lot of other things that are very important for us to recognize headed into the season. Very excited to have Aaron Moore join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. VSiN contributor, professor at Rider University as well, to help dive into a lot of these scenarios. Aaron, how are you today? What's going on?
Good, Stormy. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it as always. And we have tasked you with compiling a top five list here for us. So thank you so much. Your top five thoughts headed into this college football season. What's number one on your list, a priority for bettors to recognize?
Well, it's a good conversation to have with the master of monetizing, Mike Palm. I think the first thing you have to do when you are looking at college football from a future standpoint is the idea of monetizing long shot tickets versus the reality of who can actually win it. And I think that's one of the main things a bettor has to do. And the example that I look at is, say, a team like Utah. You can get them 60-1. They look like they might win the Big 12, and they can get into the playoffs. That looks juicy from a monetizing standpoint. But on the other half of it, look at a team like Ohio State. Yes, it's 4-1. That is a pretty short number to be talking about in July. But I think from the standpoint of who can actually win it and who can actually cash that ticket, I am a big fan at this point of Ohio State 4-1. I think when it comes wintertime, Stormy, you're going to be happy to have a 4-1 ticket in your hand, while at the same time you're going to be thinking about monetizing. So I think the main one is monetize versus reality.
Professor, I think you make a very good point. When I bet Cincinnati to make the playoffs a couple of years ago at 14-1, I wanted to eliminate the fact that they'd be a big dog. And you know, you could bet them at whatever it was, 60-1 or 50-1 to win the whole thing, but you're going to have to lay $3 or $4 juice with Alabama as a hedge. And so, under the new playoff format, unless you think Utah's getting a top four seed, they're going to have to win three games now, and they'll be a dog in probably two of them. So I think the math supports what you're saying. Now, this Ohio State team, to dovetail off your point, considered by many to be one of the greatest of all times when you go position by position. How can you monetize, not just from a futures perspective, but week to week with this Buckeye team?
So, Mike, I think one of the other points that I'm looking at is the pressure on Ryan Day. I'm going to say that I don't think there's any other coach in any major sport that has more pressure on Ryan Day, not just to win, but to win considerably and to win well. And I think you have to look at Ohio State in terms of getting that national perspective and getting that national Big Ten spotlight without Michigan being the same team, without Harbaugh. I think you're going to see Ohio State play those first three or four games against some weak teams and put up big numbers. So I think it's going to be part of this new selection committee, part of this new playoff, that Ohio State is going to have to win in the beginning. They're going to have to win well. They're going to have to show these style points. So I think Ohio State early on against that weak part of their schedule, they are going to want to win big and considerably. And I don't necessarily know if you're going to be able to lay enough points in the beginning. And then I would imagine after about week four, you might see the market respond a little bit. And then you might have to look at taking the other side of Ohio State.
And it feels like if there's ever a time to beat Michigan, it's now. No excuses. You have them at home and it's a completely different roster from the one that won a national championship last year under Jim Harbaugh. Let's go to number three on your list. What's the number three thought ahead of college football season for you?
So this is a good one. I'm interested to see how Mike responds to this. I am going to set 4.5 as the line, juice to the over, the amount of teams with two losses that make the playoffs. And you have to look at it in the standpoint of now you have super conferences. Super conferences have super teams. They're going to beat up on each other. So having that undefeated season, I don't necessarily know is going to be realistic in the SEC. And maybe Ohio State and the Big Ten could do it, but I don't know how realistic that is. You look at DraftKings, Stormy, there are 8 teams that are at minus or at least even money, being Alabama, to make the playoffs. And most of those teams have a win total under 10.5. So you have to look at it. There's going to be a number of 2-loss teams making it to the playoffs. So I'm going to set that total at 4.5, juice to the over, teams with 2 losses to be one of the 12 to make the college football playoffs.
Aaron, what would you put the number of SEC teams at?
And you know what? That one, I think I'm going to have to say at least 4. That's probably going to be bare minimum, at least 4. It is interesting. It's going to be the SEC and the Big Ten and whoever else gets in there plus Notre Dame.
Yeah, Paul Howard said to me he would make it 3.5. I said that's too low. It's got to be 4 or maybe even 4.5. Point number 4 here is very interesting because Stormy and I have been talking about this for a few weeks, and we had Mountain West football media days with Boise State here. Give you liberty or give you nothing for that group of 5 team. I think Stormy and I are on the other side, but I want to frame a hypothetical argument and then let you talk to this point. Liberty goes undefeated, which we assume they will, with a very weak schedule. Boise State loses by 10 at Oregon in week 2, but ends up winning the Mountain West and they're 12-1 or whatever the record is. Does Liberty get in ahead of a 1-loss Boise State team?
Mike, I'm going to have to say they do. And I think this idea of being undefeated this year after what happened to Florida State, that was a big talking point. Ultimately, the committee is going to look at is Boise, if they get in, are they going to win the national championship? No. If Liberty gets in, are they going to win the national championship? No. So I think if that's the deciding factor is which one of these teams gets in, that very cosmetic, beautifully looking 12-0, I think, gets Liberty into the college football playoff over a 1-loss team. And I think what happened to Florida State last year is going to play into Liberty, which by all accounts, they should go undefeated. They have one tough game, non-conference, Appalachian State. So we really have to look at it from a realistic standpoint. Liberty going undefeated, I think that gets them in the playoffs after what happened to Florida State last year.
So here's my pushback, Aaron, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, because you referenced the Florida State side of it, but not the Liberty side from what we saw last year in the New Year's Six Bowl, where they got rocked by Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl out there. And I think that the committee afterwards was probably regretting to an extent that they put in an undefeated Liberty team instead of an SMU, for example, who was another very highly ranked group of 5 team that played a more competitive schedule. You said it, Liberty schedule is very easy. It's actually the easiest on paper in the country going into this year. I think the selection committee might have learned from that and said, no, let's go with a Boise State who played a much more competitive schedule and will give us a more competitive game.
Great point, Stormy. Can't deny that what Liberty did last year looks certainly poor. But I think from the standpoint of Liberty being this group of five, and if they are undefeated, that there is such a difference now between those Power Two conferences and everybody else. It just becomes kind of easy to put that 12-0 team into the playoffs. So yes, Liberty last year looked bad, but one of the things we talk about in college football, there's so much turnover. Last year's team isn't necessarily going to be this year's team. So if it is undefeated, I think that's going to be the final check mark in the Flames category.
Professor, your last point is Oregon State under 7.5, and people can go post on the website, or if you want to do a tweet about it, we can get into it. But I think a prescient issue right now, and you're so good at handicapping electorates and the people that decide these year-long awards. Obviously, maybe the number one sports story that anybody talks about is WNBA Rookie of the Year and the whole Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese thing. It almost seems as if the whole league is willing Angel Reese to continue her double-double streak throughout the rest of the year. I mean, other teams are following her intentionally so she can get to the free throw line in games that have been decided with 6 seconds left. And last night they fed her the ball 11 straight times, really sacrificing the game for it against New York Liberty. What do you know about who votes for the WNBA season-long awards, and what can we find out? Because I've done some tertiary research on it here, and it's hard to find out other than it's like 50 to 56 people that are a combination of beat writers and broadcasters. What can you tell us?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, Mike, that we talk about who's betting on the Heisman and who's betting for Major League Baseball awards. Doing some research, it's hard to find out who is actually voting for WNBA awards. And from what I've found out, it is about 50 writers/members of the Basketball Writers Association. So you're going to get the beat writers, you're going to get some national people, and they're going to vote on it. And it's going to be one of the most interesting votes maybe in postseason history as to who gets this award. So you're going to have about 50 people or so voting on it. And clearly the momentum now is Angel Reese and what she's doing in terms of how her teammates are responding to her. So clearly the teammates and maybe even many of the opponents want Angel Reese to win this award. And there's a lot of momentum, even though Clark is such a big favorite.
Awesome spot today, Aaron. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Good luck to Liberty.
That's cold-blooded. Aaron Moore, everybody. We'll be right back after a quick timeout here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, our VSiN experts have been hard at work all offseason putting together our NFL betting guide to get you set for all of the action. We've got a comprehensive team profile for each and every team in the league with power ratings and win total predictions, proven betting systems and trends like how to win with our betting splits, plus top picks from all of our experts and analysts for season win totals, futures, props, and awards markets. But in order to get the guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And right now, when you head to VSiN.com/subscribe and use our promo code Lombardi, instead of the usual $240 price, we're giving you VSiN Pro for $199. And as a special bonus, we're throwing in an extra month for free. So that's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers. In addition to the betting guide, you're getting the daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and a whole lot more. Head to vsin.com/subscribe now. And again, use that promo code Lombardi, vsin.com/subscribe. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we're rocking along on this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Lots of NFL news and notes coming out each and every day. It's funny, we talk about this being a slow season, but between just random sound bites that have come out, guys on various shows, we've had the wide receiver series on Netflix that dropped this week, Hard Knocks, the ESPYs yesterday. We've had a lot of talking points and things to get into. And George Kittle, who is a part of the wide receiver series despite being a tight end, he was on the Rich Eisen show promoting the event and everything that went on. And he was asked about a potential 18-game schedule. Here are some of the thoughts from George Kittle.
I've been an advocate of this. Well, one, like, it's inevitably first, it's going to get to 18 games at some point, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think I've said it for like, ever since we got to 17 games, I was like, just give us two byes. And it just adds an extra week to the season anyways, because now you're, instead of 18 weeks, now you're at 19 weeks. So that's another week of football that You're on TV with all the ads and all that stuff. Increases the season long, and it gives guys an extra week of rest because you need that. It's hard to play 18 games. But like, I'm totally fine with that. Just give us two byes.
The thing I took from that was his very first sentence that it feels inevitable, which I think there's very few people that would disagree at this point how it continues to be brought up and discussed.
Well, 17 is such an odd number. It was a stepping stone to get to 18. I think everybody realized that at the time. You were going to sit with an odd number of games.
He even said later on in that clip, he's like, our CBA had us playing 16 games. And when it became 17, we're just like, okay, we're doing this. It feels like the same thing for 18.
The interesting thing, and Burrow got criticized earlier in the week, Joe Burrow, for saying, if we do 18, we have to have two bye weeks. Well, I think everybody feels that way. As labor, what can you control, right? You can try to control what you get paid and your amount of time off, right? So if they're going to have extra workload, right, then they want to control their time off. And from an injury standpoint, it makes sense. And Stormy, from a betting standpoint as a bettor, are you crippled when you say, oh, God, six teams are on buys this week, so I only have 13 games? Are you so upset that the 10 a.m. Pacific window might only have seven games instead of nine or something like, you know what I mean?
Makes it harder for the millions contest picks, okay? Picking five is not always easy. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I agree, 100%.
I think, is it better? It's not that consequential, because how can you focus on all those? I guess you have a point.
Narrow your focus. It could be helpful.
You're trying to pick five in a contest. I get that, but I don't think anybody's going to grimace. And what it gets you is another 2 weeks of football, right? The front end. I mean, we're going to be playing the Super Bowl in March eventually. Yeah. It feels like, right? Doesn't it?
Well, so a lot of people, and part of the Joe Burrow conversation when he was on the Pardon My Take show with Barstool last week, was he was saying you have two byes, but you have one that's essentially the Pro Bowl, like you do in-season all-star like baseball that's coming up this week. I just question if the teams would allow that, because they're so sensitive to injuries in a sport like football, even if it's non-contact stuff and just drills, if you risk something, if they want to do it. But I think that would make a ton of sense, wherever it's a season, it's a cross the league bye in addition to the other one. And then that gets you to where the Super Bowl is President's Day weekend and the rest of the country has Monday off. I think a lot of that makes sense. And that's probably been Roger Goodell's goal for a while, is to have the Super Bowl that day, so people get to have fun on Super Bowl Sunday and then have the day off.
Now, most people take it off, right? You know, very few people work on Fridays anymore for the office. Like these office buildings and
most people work from home now.
Well, that's the result of pandemic, because people in school attendance, but people feel like we did it out of necessity. Why can't we do it now? I know Derek has a very different philosophy that you need to be here, because collaboratively and talking to each other every day helps.
FaceTime is valuable.
Yeah, it creates better ideas and more efficiency. But it's funny, because I sat on not really a school board, but it's called a SOT. It's a parents board that advises. And so I sat on this for my stepdaughter's school, the school she was in last year, right? And we were going through truancy numbers. And the principal was explaining to us that prior to the pandemic, Clark County, which is a very large school district, as we've talked about, third largest in area and fourth largest in number of students in the United States. But attendance in elementary schools in Clark County pre-pandemic, on an average day, there would be about 9.5 to 10% absenteeism. Now it's over 30.
Wow.
Since pandemic.
That's jarring.
People don't feel like they have to be there anymore, right? And she says, I don't know if we'll ever get it under 30, or we'll ever get it under 25, because the world has just changed the way. It was okay to miss school. It was okay to work remotely. And so these office buildings on Fridays in these major cities, whether it's Chicago or Dallas or Denver or wherever, there's very few people there. Most people are on a 3-4 or 3 day into the office schedule. Some are even the other way, where you only come in 2 days.
But for youth in elementary school, that feels like the most important time to be around people as you're developing social skills. This is a conversation for another day, but it's very interesting. I agree with you. We still got a week before people are showing up.
What's going to happen when the WNBA takes their break for the Olympics? Are you looking forward to the Olympics?
Very much so.
I'm looking forward to one thing, one specific sport.
What is that?
The U.S. women's track and field, I think, will be sensational.
Have you, speaking of all these Netflix, docuseries that they have up there, there's one called, it's Sprint or Sprinter. And it dives into a lot of the U.S. Olympic athletes and the Jamaicans and kind of like the rivalry between the two. It's awesome.
It's great stuff. It's great drama.
Noah Lyles, I'm very excited for you. Sha'Carri Richardson, let's get it going.
I don't think that I don't think that either of the American basketball teams will face much competition, like from a drama standpoint. So I'm actually really looking forward to the track and field, the sprint events, the 400, 200, and hundreds.
Yeah, I'm most excited for gymnastics personally. Mm-hmm. It's a sport I competed in when I was younger. My mom's a coach, and so I followed the sport for my entire life. And I did it a whole thing yesterday, even on the show in my storm warning, about Simone Biles being pound for pound probably the best athlete in the entire world. It's unbelievable.
What is she, 72 pounds?
She's like...
She's not 100, is she?
What she does is freakish. It's hard for the normal person's eye to even comprehend what she's doing in certain tricks. It's like the things she does, other people, male or female, half the time can't even attempt, let alone execute in competition, let alone on the biggest stage in the world. And so I'm just always impressed with her. But as far as the 18-game season goes, I do think like a couple other things about it are interesting, because we talk about this league and how much they've prioritize to them and put such an emphasis on health and safety. Number one, that's what it's all about. Yet you're putting these players in another car crash another week in the season. Like, what are we talking about? Okay, let's change the kickoff. That's really going to make a difference, but a whole nother game on the schedule isn't. Neither here nor there. I did have one more soundbite that I want to play for you today. We talked a little bit about the Detroit Lions yesterday, and Amon-Ra St. Brown said this week on the Pivot podcast, despite the Lions' success last season, they still feel like underdogs.
We're rooting for you guys. You guys are so good. Like this, that, and the other. It's like, it's cool, but you still remember what they were saying 3 years ago. And I feel like our whole team kind of feels the same way. We still, even though we're not the underdog, we still feel like we are. We still feel like teams think we're the same old Lions. We can't win the big game, whatever it is. So I just love being around, you know, all the guys at once that were there. A lot of us are still there, the coaches, and building this thing together.
And you asked Michael the question yesterday about the Texans staying hungry. Mm-hmm. I had the same thought about the Lions staying hungry after the success that they had.
Well, it sounds like they still have a chip on their shoulder from that clip, right? Which is, I think they have the right mentality. I think this team has to bounce back. And, it, you know, you say the Super Bowl loser's curse. I don't think, like, for them, it's the NFC Championship game loser's curse. And that so hard to get over. When they held the 49ers to a field goal, the opening possession of the second half, I said they're going to win this game. And then the Gibbs fumble, I thought, really turned the whole momentum. But anyhow, I think they have the right mindset. They have a veteran, level-headed quarterback. To Michael's point yesterday, they've continued to improve and add pieces to this team to try to win a championship and get back to the spot they were. It's, to me, the Hard Knocks thing with them was really influential in how people rallied behind this team nationally, really loved Dan Campbell, crazy Dan Campbell, and this team. And Detroit still has this, you know, chip on the shoulder attitude and trying to, but they've gone through a really tough. Michigan finally wins, right? They win the national title, but a really long time where the Red Wings went from champs to, and Detroit Tigers went from champ, right? And the Pistons went from the bad boys to bottom of the league, right? And so a whole downturn that, you know, a little bit coincided with the industry and the auto industry too. So I think they have the right mentality, and I have, but I just think the Packers are going to be great competition for them.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting division. We talk so much about the AFC North, but the NFC North could be very competitive as well. Season win total 10.5 for Detroit. It is juiced to the over at -135, coming off a 12 win season and an NFC title appearance. Had a 17-point lead at halftime, could not close it out. But as a 49ers fan, didn't hurt me much. We'll be right back closing things out. Would Palm have a qualm as we end the day on the Lombardi Line?
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to all things VSiN, you'll love VSiN.com. Each and every day, all of our show hosts, experts, analysts, and guests have their best bets laid out in one easy place to find on the website. You can also catch updated betting splits each and every day for all events that are on, exclusive articles and columns from our guy, Michael Lombardi, and so many more of our experts, betting tools, betting guides. If you haven't been to VSiN.com yet, what are you doing? Today's the day. It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting content.
Some bets just don't sit right with Mike Palm.
You took all the money you made and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters?
Are you considering a bet that would make him sick?
Don't throw up.
It's time to ask Mike, would Palm have a qualm?
Let's see what we can get Mike Palm on board with today, or if I present a bet or a situation that makes you physically ill. Starting with the Red Sox. Would Palm have a qualm with the guys from Boston winning the AL East? We got a 30-1 price right now. Can they claw their way back in the second half?
You know, I was looking when I was doing looking at the matchups today, and look at this Red Sox record. You know, they just kind of keep winning these each series, and obviously the Yankees are hot and cold. The Cubs just go
very
in and
cold for the last month.
The Cubs go in and sweep Baltimore. How could you have predicted that? I have no qualm with this. Even 20-1, they're only 5.5 back. I really think that they've got it. I would.
Oh, sorry, I said 30-1, 20-1. Still
now,
very good. Very
now
good,
they yeah. are, but I would take them like in a matchup with the Yankees, or who's going to have the better record, just head to head with the Yankees. I would take them at like 6-7-1. So that means you've got to overcome the Orioles, who I think are the best team in the American League still. But look, you're 5.5 out, and you still have 40% of the season to play. Hawks pitched well, but not without a lot, but not with not much luck. I have no problem with 20-1.
So while we're on baseball, the All-Star game coming up next week, Home Run Derby, all that good stuff. What do you feel about players being allowed to bow out of All-Star games? Would Palm have a qualm with a player sitting it out?
Well, you mean for my qualm would be with the player skipping it? Because they have to be allowed to. There's yeah. no, the slavery's over. So you can't say they have to go to this game.
But it's like opt-outs in professional sports,
I
right?
hate it with
like,
the bowl games. Yeah. I really hate it. The bowls have been ruined. Totally ruined. I loved bowls. I thought bowls were great betting opportunities every year.
I am hoping that the potential for NIL opportunities with bowls might convince if there's compensation financially
well,
for players to be interested.
That's yeah. the only way to get them to play now is to make the winning team all gets X or appearance yeah. fees or whatever it is.
The backpacks and iPads in the gift suite aren't doing it anymore. You need cash money, homie.
I have no qualm if there's any kind of a lingering injury issue, but if you're just doing it because you want a few extra days off, now you should represent your league. I have a qualm with that.
Okay. I know.
And your team.
You are somebody who is high on Texas in college football this year. They're the second shortest shot in the SEC to win it all behind only Georgia. But their quarterback, Quinn Ewers, is a plus 950 yeah. price to win the Heisman. Would Palm have a qualm with a Ewers wager
no
for
qualm.
Heisman?
No qualm. People keep, every time I say something about Texas winning the SEC, they, I get
Everybody's
all.
Everybody's mad at you for it. I
don't
they know
get
why.
All these. I get the Facebook message. I get the. direct message on Twitter. I get people texting me. You sound like an idiot. What's wrong with you? They can't beat Georgia. They can't. I don't know. Why not?
Am I silly for another year saying I like what? Cam Rising in this market as a shot, taking a long shot on Cam Rising? Because you see Avery Johnson in there for Kansas State at 25-1. Uh-huh. Cam Rising is 40-1 plus in this market, even though Utah's the favorite in the Big 12. I don't understand. I just don't understand the odds disparity. I feel like from a numbers standpoint, it's a possibility.
I think, you know, I think Jackson Dart is a little bit interesting because Kiffin will get him a lot of stats. They'll play very fast. I don't like Cam Ward. I draw through Cam Ward. I watched him play in the Rose Bowl against UCLA. It was one of the worst games for a good quarterback I've ever seen in my life. They couldn't do anything. Riley Leonard at Notre Dame, he'll have enough eyes on him. Can they? I mean, this reaching for ACC quarterbacks, I mean, will this be the last one?
Yeah, people
one?
Thought that was going
to
work for
to me,
Hartman.
Was a bust. A total bust.
I was very disappointed. But everybody just still kept talking about him because of his dang hair. But how about the production on the football field, Sam? Dylan Gabriel and Carson Beck, I think, rightful favorites there at 8-1. Quinn Ewers there at plus 950. Will Howard of Ohio State and Jalen Milrow both 15-1 apiece. Continuing down our list here. You know what? Let's go to Alabama for a moment.
I thought you were going to the Mirage.
Let's stick in the SEC. We'll go there next. Would Palm have a qualm with Alabama in year one without head coach Nick Saban going under their win total? It's juiced minus 140 under 9.5.
No, I think it's a big transition. And I think you lose a lot in terms of not just Saban, but his staff and the culture. And so it's so much pressure, right? Especially in this initial year. That's no cupcake game to go up to Camp Randall, to Madison. That's a really tough place to play. There'll be obviously a decided underdog against Georgia. Tough game at Tennessee. You saw Missouri at the end of the year. Nobody wanted to play Arizona and Missouri at the end of the year, right? Those two teams were really tough. You have to go to Baton Rouge. You have to go to Norman. I think it's tough. And of course, it's favored. No qualm with that bet at all.
I also know, like, in the SEC and for national championship, we're all looking for ways to make more money, bang for your buck, get those higher odds and stuff. Georgia still in the SEC, favorite for a national title as well. They have as many losses in the last 3 years as they do national championships, if that gives you any frame of reference for how they just continue. No matter how many players go in the draft, no matter what happens, they just continue to rebuild and retool, and it's insane. Now I'll go to the Mirage. Would Palm have a qualm with going to the Mirage this week?
I do, because you're going to be so frustrated getting in and out of there and not having a chance to do what you want to do. I think my advice is to stay away, because the realistic chance that you have to win any of these drawings or prizes is minuscule compared to the level of frustration you will feel. So I do have a qualm trying to go there now.
Yeah, I don't think you could pay me to go. I'm not about that chaos. I like my alone time. So yesterday on the show, we were talking about a clip from Luke Kuechly where he said if given the decision to choose between peak Cam Newton or peak Lamar Jackson, who would he choose? He said Cam Newton because of the physical build, run through people type of a quarterback that he was. And for Lamar Jackson, all the amazing tools, he's somebody you could get down. Cam, much harder to get down. Would Palm have a qualm with Anthony Richardson being that next top tier dual threat quarterback up and coming in the NFL, given his skill set and body type?
But I don't see it as a running, as the dual threat part of this. I don't know that he's anywhere in a league as a runner with Cam or with Lamar. Cam at Auburn to me was amazing because he could lean forward for 4 yards. At any time that they got to like third and three or fourth and two, there was no stopping him.
You just knew. It was
you
inevitable.
You just knew. It was inevitable. He was too big. Now, he has the 15-1 year and they go to the Super Bowl. And then his career gets defined by not falling on the football.
The one
right?
play.
Right? His career kind of, now he's sort of out there in the wilderness with his nonsense. And
he apparently didn't get invited to Christian McCaffrey's wedding and
that.
Was complaining about it on his podcast.
I saw that. I do have a qualm because I don't agree with the dual part of this.
Okay, fair. Let's go to the WNBA since this has been a hot button topic for you recently. Would Palm have a qualm with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese as co-rookies of the year? Is that in play?
It may be the only way to stop an international crisis. Is the voters engineered this that they both, they're going to be on the same team in the All-Star game, right? That's
All-Stars versus the USA team.
That's interesting. They get to be teammates for the first. People forget. You know, they say, oh, they met with LSU. She played against her at Maryland. This girl's from Baltimore. We talk Bayou Barbie, Barbie, mm-hmm. this. She's from Baltimore, okay? They were playing all through in the Big Ten. It's not like they play every year. So it's so fascinating to me, the dynamics of race and how they play into everything here. And it's like, I was saying, like on my Twitter timeline, if you just took the names out, I don't know if these tweets are about Biden and Trump or about Reese and Clark. It's like, everything has to be the opposite. Nobody can recognize the other person has any worth. And it's so one-sided on stuff.
Polarizing conversation, for sure. You asked Michael yesterday on the program about the Houston Texans and if they could stay hungry. Would Palm have a qualm with the Texans to be the top seed in the AFC, 8-1 the price?
I think it's too short. I think that division is competitive, even if you say it's not the top division. I think those teams are pretty even. They have to overcome from being the hunter to the hunted. I really think it's going to be Kansas City. I think the Ravens are going to regress. I think it's probably right Kansas City, but the next best shot is the Bengals. I know it's so hard, their division, but those are the only two teams I could see in the AFC.
You also said you contemplated having Jordan Love in your top five quarterbacks. Yeah. Would Palm have a qualm with the Packers to be the top seed in the NFC at 9-1?
No, I think the Eagles are a sneaky choice because I think that division, I'm down on Dallas. I think they probably go 5-1, maybe 6-0 in division. 49ers have a tough schedule. Sure. I'm not sure about the Rams. I'm like, the NFC East
is
hard for me.
Can you be sneaky as the second shortest shot on the board, though?
It is, because everybody anoints the 49ers. Who's going to compete with the 49ers in the NFC?
Well,
that's where it starts.
I was very offended. We asked that question all week. Who's the biggest threat to San Francisco in the NFC? Yeah. Nobody was saying, like, no, it's the 49ers to take. I needed that. I needed somebody to be like, what are you talking about? San Francisco, 3-1 to be the top seed in the NFC. Eagles plus 550. Lions 6-1. Cowboys 7-1. That's a wrap for us today. Thanks so much for hanging out on this Football Friday. Have a great weekend.